Testing.
Evening, everyone. How y'all doing?
Groovy.
That picture's posted up there for you.
Thank you.
Up in the know. You're welcome. So how are you guys?
I am cold. It's below 70 degrees.
So do you have your flannel jammies on?
That is a redundant question, young lady. Yes, of course I do.
Cool. And your Notre Dame sweatshirt?
And a sweater on underneath that.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
But no socks, just slippers.
Well, I have flip flops on.
No,
like
slippers.
30 here.
No slippers with big fuzzy stuff.
Oh. Huh. I like fuzzy slippers, but most of the time I just wear flip flops. It's just easier to kick them on and kick them off.
I just want my feet warm.
My feet don't really get cold. I don't know why.
I hope some people show up because I did a lot of work on this.
Where am I?
They even got a hero from your pool. Gunnery Sergeant. What the hell?
I guess not much of a hero.
Gunnery Sergeant Daly.
Oh, Daly, yeah. Yep.
Dan Daly. Hell, he's fought in Korea, he fought in China, every place else even before this. Haiti. Jesus, dude.
Yeah. There's a couple of legends in the Corps, he's one of them.
Cool.
I mean, I'm America. We're gonna give us just a few minutes here before I light her up.
You like my comment on today's poll about the Air Force?
Yes, I saw that.
I just thought I'd do that for you.
That didn't have officer, anyway. Officer,
I think they must have missed that one.
I'm sorry?
I said I think I must have missed that one.
Even the people in the Air Force know Marine Corps lore.
Oh, about the
Devil Dog?
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I got that.
I saw something made me think about you just before I came on, Sean. This woman posted this thing, had a one of those big empty bottles, water bottles, you know. And it was filled with quarters. And she said a quarter a day at the end of the year, you'll have $10,250.
Yeah, if you put it in the stuff, if you do someplace else where you can actually gain interest on it, you could be better off.
I thought to myself, I've seen her post before. She's a pretty smart woman. I think it was just a troll. But I thought about Sean. I thought, yeah, he could have a lot of fun with this. He'd probably be like banging his head against the floor.
Yeah, the math's not mathing.
The mass. All right, let's get started here. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our Bourbon and Brandy Hour with the Doc. Kaz and Ms. Deb, your go-to place for serving truth and empowering citizens with in-depth analysis of NGOs fueling illegal immigration and child sex trafficking. Before we dive in, I want to express our heartfelt thanks for your support. Gesture Politics is independently funded through your donations, which means we are committed to delivering the truth without external influence. If you value what we do, and apparently you don't, because we haven't had a donation in months, please consider donating. We understand that it's hard and it's Christmas and you're trying to provide for your family, so it's not that big of a deal. But we do really, really thank you for the reposting and the comments and on Twitter and on justapolitics.com. We hit a record here the other day with Taz's article. I am Dr. Sean. After serving the Air Force, where I did my coursework in some unusual settings, like the back of C-130s, I pursued further education at Colorado State and later at the University of Alabama. In 2010, I founded a company I've been learning from my incredible staff ever since, full time. Taz is a seasoned Marine and Navy veteran, where he was known for daring feats like landing helicopters on tiny boats. Taz graduated from the University of Cincinnati and is also a Notre Dame fan who is in the college playoffs, football playoffs for those of you that don't know. Post-service, he turned his sharp mind to law, and that's what he did. Ms. Deb is a retired executive with a wealth of knowledge across numerous industries. Ms. Deb brings unmatched knowledge and insight to our discussion. Taz is the brains, Ms. Deb is the wisdom, but I'm the beautiful one. So thank you for serving truth and empowering citizens here on justapolitics.com. We have we have my article on the NGO posted in the space and a donation form if you guys would like that. So before we start, I'm going to do a hero. It was June 1918 in Bellewood, France. A name that should come to symbolize courage, sacrifice, and the unyielding spirit of the United States Marine Corps. The Germans were dug in deep and machine guns, and this is from World War I, just so you know. Among Marines was Gunnery Sergeant Dan Daly, a veteran who was already legendary within the Corps. It was this moment of chaos and despair that Daly's action would etch his name in the annals of history. With the Marines under relentless fire, Daly rose to his feet, defying death itself. He stood in full view of the enemy's gun. Calm and unwavering, he turned to his men, battle hardened yet shaken by the carnage around them. In that moment, he issued the rallying cry that would carry them forward into legend. Come on, you sons of bitches, do you want to live forever? It was more than a command, it was a challenge, a call to action, a declaration of the Marine Corps ethos. Inspired by Daly's fearless leadership, the Marines surged forward across open ground into the teeth of the German fire. They charged with bayonets fixed and unyielding resolve. The battle raged through the dense, tangled woods, trees shattered by artillery, trenches soaked in blood. Yet the Marines pressed on, driving the enemy from their strongholds inch by inch. By the end of the day, Belem was no longer a German fortress. It was a testament to the Marine Corps' tenacity. The cost was staggering. The woods became a graveyard for countless of brave souls. But their sacrifice was not in vain. The Marines not only turned the tide of the battle, but cemented the reputation of some of the fiercest world warriors the world has ever known. Dan Daly was no stranger to heroism either, having already earned 2 Medals of Honor in prior campaigns. This is just a legend. But at Bellewood, his legacy became something greater. His defiance in the face of death, his unwavering commitment to duty, and his ability to inspire men in the darkest hour have made him an enduring symbol of the Marine Corps. So, yeah, just a hell of a guy. Crazy. Anyway, and that was on Taz's poll today. That's why I picked him. So, Taz, take it away.
Today we're going to, well, first I'd like to say good evening, everybody. We want to talk about NGOs. Yeah, can you hear me?
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can anybody hear me?
We can all hear you.
All right.
Okay, NGOs and immigration. I think we have to be, well, I should say the Western countries have to be the only ones in history that are self-funding their own suicide. And that's, we're doing it through NGOs and massive illegal immigration. The Heritage Foundation had an article they wrote, and I couldn't find out how many NGOs we fund, but they identified at least 30 that are involved in moving illegal migrants from the border north. And then there's at least one, maybe two, that are involved extensively in moving them from Central and Latin, South America, north through Mexico. And you know, what happens is it's like a tag team. Once they get to the border, the ones that are caught, they get issued a summons to appear for a hearing on immigration asylum claims. And then they're released on parole. And of course, the vast majority of them never show up. And when I talk vast majority, I mean almost all of them. So the ones that are active bringing them up that I know of positively is one is the UN, believe it or not, although that's not an NGO. But the other one is one that's well known to us. It's the American Red Cross. And they actually, well, let me back up. The UN gives out debit cards and they refill them on a monthly basis. And that's how they help fund these immigrant trains. Illegal migrant trains. The Red Cross is even worse. They actually provide a map, and it's posted up in the nest there. Deb posted it up there. It has all the routes mapped out on it to the border, and along with the cities. They also provide information, an information packet that talks about where they can get shelter, hotels, clinics, along the way in Mexico and Central America. They talk about, where you can go to get contraceptives if you need them, but they advise you to bring them with you if you're on them. They give you pamphlets on what to tell border agents, our border agents, if you're, caught and how you can state a claim for, an asylum claim. And they actually even give tips on how to hop on trains and where to sit at on the boxcars and what to watch out for, like overhanging branches and power lines and things like that. And they also give debit cards. So that's the Great American Red Cross. Now, to top all this off, the Red Cross sits on FEMA's what they call food and shelter program on the board of that government-funded program. And it received $350 million, which then the Red Cross, along with some other NGOs, divvies up and gives out to other NGOs providing services. So that's how they get them here. I mean, they actually give them maps and all the information they need, plus funding to get here. Once they get here, there's a second set jumps in. And again, I haven't been able to put my finger on all of them, but the ones that jumped out are Jewish Family Council, the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, which had a funding of, from the U.S. government, $83.1 million in 21, and by 22, it had increased to $182.6 million. But that's pretty much small potatoes. The Church World Services, they're probably the smallest ones. They have, oh, let me back up. The Lutheran Social Services received 80% of its budget from the U.S. government. The only 20% were was donations and however else they got their money. And then you have the Church World Services. That's a small fry. They only got $20.5 million in fiscal year 22, which was 40% of its total assets, not 40% of its budget, total assets. The big player is Catholic Charities, which received $1.4 billion. That's $1.4 billion. Now, they don't get to spend all that money because then they divvy it up and send it out to other NGOs. And NGOs, I should have defined it, are non-government organizations. Some of them are 501c3 charities. Other ones are just NGOs. Catholic Social Services, they received, their whole budget was $2.4 billion, and they received $1.4 from the federal government, which is 58% or 59% of total funding. Then you have Global Refuge. They only got $250 million in 22, but their CEO raked in $500,000, which isn't too shabby. Then there's an outfit called Endeavors, and I never heard of them before I started researching this. They were able to snag $1.5 billion in 2022. And its CEO, who happens to be the former chief financial officer for DHS, Department of Homeland Security, he got paid $750,000. Southwest Key, I don't know how much they snagged, but their CEO made $1 million. And these are all people that their whole thing is to take the immigrants or illegal migrants that come across the border after they go through processing, give them food, shelter, medical care, and they even provide like really nifty things like pet therapy and plant therapy for the kids. I wish our kids could get that, but anyway. The three of them, World Services, an outfit called Global Refuge and Endeavors, their total combined grants in 2019, just before Biden took over, was $597 million. And in 2022, it went to $2 billion. And I don't know what it is for fiscal year 23. They haven't gotten those numbers yet. The amount of money we're funding and the services we're providing, not just within the United States, but to get them here is absolutely insane. And you wonder how 10.8 million, I think is the last number that came out, million people were caught crossing the border or turning themselves in. And another couple million that are what they call gotaways in the last 4 years. You want to know how they got here. It's through us being the U.S., the U.S. being the taxpayers, funding NGOs that then go down and actually run ad campaigns and get them up here. And then when they get to the border, they hook up with a coyote, which is a smuggler, human smuggler, and bring them across the border. And not only is it bad for us, it suppresses wages. So if you're lower social economic, in the lower social economic classes, instead of making $22 an hour, you might be making $14 an hour because it's flooded the market with cheap labor. That's number one. Number two, don't let people tell you that crime, that illegals commit fewer crimes than natural born citizens. The Council for Immigration Reform did a, well, first off, let me back up. There's only one state that keeps track of illegals that have been arrested and are serving time, convicted or arrested. And that's Texas. Nobody else really keeps it, nor does the federal government. So everybody that's telling you that illegals commit fewer crimes than native born citizens or legal immigrants, what they do is they go down and they review the Texas stats and then use that as a basis to make their projections. The problem with that, and all these come from pretty much two researchers, and I forget which university they're with, but what they do is they go down and they get the data for like 2021 and they run the numbers. They say, oh yeah, look, there's fewer illegals committing crimes. The problem with that is that is the number of people identified positively as being in the country illegally at the time they were arrested. And then what happens is over time, as they stay in prison, if they get convicted, they stay in prison, they find a lot of people that were not identified earlier as illegals are actually illegal. So it might take 2 or 3 or 4 years to start getting all these people sorted. The other problem is People that get arrested for misdemeanors and they're going to be out in 6 months, a year, a lot of those are illegals that are not caught up because they haven't had time to track down whether or not they're here legally or illegally, or they're even a citizen. And the reason is they have to send their fingerprints to the federal government, who then runs a check on them, and it takes a long time to get that information back. So what the Council for Immigration Reform did was they compared the numbers of illegals that were identified in the year that they, at the time that they were arrested, but the number that they were identified, you know, like three years later, in it for the same year. And they found out that there's a huge difference. And it goes from illegals committing, for example, murder at like one per 100,000 less than native born people, to illegals committing murder at a point and a half more per 100,000 than the legal people. So the murder rate was, I'd say 3%, I think is what it was, or just under 3% for native born. The murder rate for illegals was up above 4%, or 4 per 100,000, not percent, I'm sorry, 4 per 100,000. So then when they tell you that illegals are not committing crimes at the same or greater rate, it's a very scoshy numbers. Now, who's right on this? I don't know. I think the Council for Immigration Reform is. But when you're dealing with these nefarious numbers, which they just don't have a really good quality control on them, you have to take them both with a grain of salt. At the very least, it seems that illegals are committing crimes, violent crimes, at the same level as Americans are, and probably at an increased level. And even if they're not committing crimes, even if they are only committing two-thirds of the crimes, number of crimes natural-born citizens are, that's two-thirds of those, I'm sorry, that's crimes that should never have been committed in the U.S. because they shouldn't be here. Lake and Riley should be alive. That young girl that was just killed by a DUI illegal should be alive. You could just go right on down the list. There's hundreds of them out there that are dead, raped, assaulted, all because there's illegals in the country that shouldn't be here. And if they weren't here, those crimes wouldn't have occurred. Additionally, a few months ago, there was a big uproar about the Venezuelan gang taking over that apartment building in Aurora, Colorado. And, you know, the whole government of Aurora, Colorado, and the leading light of the Colorado governor came out and said, "Oh, that's all nonsense. Don't listen to it. It's they're just hyping it." Well, they just arrested 14 people. And even though the official reports haven't come out, there's substantial evidence in news reporting that's reporting that they seem to be, or they are, linked to the transnational gang from Venezuela that took over the apartment buildings before. 14 people. Not only did they rob people, they kidnapped some, stabbed one, and took them to a different apartment and tied them up. I don't know why. Nobody knows yet, but that just happened yesterday, day before yesterday. So yeah, crime is a problem. So is suppression of wages. And this whole argument in that, oh, your avocados are going to cost too much money. To me, if we deport illegals, it's just mind-boggling, because that is an argument for, at best, indentured servitude. I mean, you're saying, yeah, let's bring up, you know, the people from down in South America paying substandard wages and make them work on the farms under threat of deportation. And they can work for, you know, just pennies on a dollar instead of paying a living wage to Americans. So I don't understand why anybody would make that argument. It's just a complete. And I'll give a quick story. When I was practicing attorneys in California, and this young lady at Subways told me that she was working. She was illegal. She admitted that. And she said that the employer said if she quit, she's going to turn her in and get her deported. And she was working for like about $3 an hour, when normally people at that time were making about $12 an hour. Now, that's just indentured servitude. Or if you want to call it a form of white slavery, but it's just unconscionable. So those are all the things that we fund and the NGOs contribute or create the problem in the states. One of the things, and I wrote this down, I have to find it. All right, here we go. In 2021, there's a place in Panama called the Darien Gap. That's where most of your illegals come through. And from May to September of 2021, there were 180 known cases of rape. It's 108 known. Not, and how many were additional ones that are unknown? These are not nice people that are transporting these people up here, the ones that are running it. Additionally, there were 400 or 4,000, over 4,000 people, coming up through the Darien Gap during the same time period that died. And there was 108 murders, known murders. And that's what we're funding, we being the American people, through our government, using these NGOs. And on top of all that, and Sean wrote a really good article on the trafficking of children. And nobody really knows how many children are out there. They say anywhere between 320 and 480,000. And they can't contact them because they don't know where there was 32,000 children who didn't show up for their asylum hearings. 32,000. They got noticed. They sent the notice to where they were supposed to be, but they didn't show up. Of the other, 300,000 to 400,000 children out there, they have no idea where they're at. A lot of them, they run their addresses, and the addresses, they either don't exist where they're supposed to be, or the kid's not there. And when you bring this up, all the open border advocates say, well, they're not really missing kids. They're just, it's not a missing kid problem. It's a paperwork problem. They just not keeping the right paperwork. So they don't know where the kids are. Well, that's the definition of a damn lost kid. If you don't know where the kid is and you don't know who they're with, they're lost. And that's number one. Number two is they're making no effort or very little effort to place these kids with their family or any relations. They used to require a DNA test before they turn kids over to family members, quote unquote. Now that's not happening. At least not in all cases. Not only that, but new regulations that are going into effect, they don't even have to do a background check on the quote sponsors. They can, but they don't have to. So nobody knows where these kids are, where they're going to, who they're with, whether they're family members or not. But it's a paperwork problem, not a missing kid problem. Or so the activists would have it. Now, and I have to admit, this is one of the more disturbing things I've researched. Just, I can't believe we're funding our own suicide. And I can't believe we're paying these NGOs. And they all have really nice sounding names. Catholic Social Services, Lutheran, Social and Refugee Services, World Refuge. Oh yeah. Endeavors. We're going to endeavor to do stuff. They spent $5 million to one company in 1 year to house illegals. That's just one company. And I have to ask myself, I'd like to know who was the principal benefactor from that company. Who was the principal owner of that company? I couldn't find it. It just goes on and on. And, you know, aside from the rapes that go on coming up here and the murders that are, and those people, they're not just waking up one morning and saying, I think I'll go to the U.S. for a better life. They're being enticed to come up here. So now the big outrage is Trump wants to do mass deportations. And everybody's going, it's going to cost $1 trillion. That was the actual number somebody threw around. Was a couple of people from, I think it was ABC, might have been NBC. It's not going to cost $1 trillion. First off, if you start locking up the people hiring the illegals, the hiring of illegals will stop and illegals will go home. Second off, if you stop funding, stop sending government funds to sanctuary cities and states, that nonsense will stop. And third, if you stop funding the NGOs, that nonsense will stop. In fact, this year, the funding is going to be over $7 billion in 2024 for NGOs to bring up illegals. Think about that. $7 billion. They haven't even been able to get temporary housing to North Carolina yet, but they can spend $7 billion and bring up another couple million illegals. That's thinking. With that, that's about all I got. Unless you want me to make some stuff up, I'll make you feel even worse.
No, we don't need CNN. If you guys want to speak or, have a thought or share anything, just send me a speaker request and we'll get you right up.
Well, the one thing I do want to say is Deb put a map that the Red Cross hands out to people in South America and Central America coming up to the States. And it's in the nest up here and it's really interesting. It is like detailed. These people are sick. I'll never give another dime to the Red Cross, not the American Red Cross anyway.
And I know that there's been, I'd heard news reports over, the months and years of, they go into these meatpacking plants and they find a lot of these kids. They make them go in there at night when there's nobody around and clean. Young children are going into these places and they have to do it. They don't have any choice. And I think that's absolutely revolting. So these kids don't get to go to school. When they should be sleeping, they're working in a meatpacking plant. That's horrible.
Well, when I was practicing law, I took a pro bono case and it was a Chinese immigrant, illegal immigrant. And they call them snakeheads instead of coyotes that bring these people in. And he was, 17, maybe 16. And he was locked up at the facility down in Florence, Arizona. And at the second hearing, a guy showed up out of nowhere claiming to be his uncle. And the judge, who was an administrative law judge, not a Section 3 judge, looked at the kid and said, "Is this your uncle?" And the kid said, "Yes, it's okay. I award custody to your uncle." And then the uncle said he lives in D.C. And he said, "Okay, well, we'll transfer this case to the D.C. Immigration Court." And they did. And I got a pro bono attorney in D.C. for him from another firm and gave him all that information, told him to contact him when he got to D.C. I got a call like a month later from the D.C. attorney going, "Where's this kid at? They've never contacted us." That guy was not his uncle. He's working in some sweatshop. He's still alive. I don't know. And before he left, I had a meeting with him. And under the law at the time, if he would turn evidence against the snakeheads, they would give him a visa to work in the States. And he declined to do that. And he told me quite frankly, he didn't use the word quite frankly, but he told me straight up that the reason he can't do that is if he did, they would kill his parents who are still in China. So that's the dirty side of this whole thing. That's what we are funding. It's the exploitation of human beings.
That's horrible. Now, isn't also in Texas, I'd heard that, that there's trees and stuff where you find women's panties and bras and stuff, and those are all the women that have been raped.
The rape tree for coyotes, that's where they brag to each other how many women they've raped, or children for that matter.
Yeah.
If you look closely at some of those rape trees, the panties they find are very, very small.
Yeah, it's been just Texas. I've read of one here in Arizona too. In fact, there's one here. It's federal land. You take your life into your own hands going out there unarmed because all the coyotes are running through there. their cargo, what they call them.
They've actually shot over the rivers across the border at ICE officials. They've actually done that.
Crazy.
And we fund this. That's the sad part. We are funding this through the NGOs.
People don't really realize. So why did Biden? The fundamental question: why did this administration want so many illegals? Well, you can already see they're trying to make them legal voters, and they'll all vote Democrat. But their children are getting, and they're going to have 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 out of 30 million that are here right now. So you have 90 million Democrat voters for life. And that's why they're doing
it. I'm not even sure it's the voting aspect of it, but here's what happens is if you can send 2 million illegals to California, when they take the census, that boosts California's population by 2 million. And then when they do the division of House seats in electoral votes, they are artificially inflating there by probably 2 or 3, maybe 5 seats and 5 electoral votes. That's why I think in the short term, illegal immigration for the Democrats is a big thing. Now, if you look at the cities they go to, yeah, they go to some red states too, but the vast majority of them are going to blue states, California, Illinois, New York. Think about it.
Colorado.
Obviously. I mean, Colorado probably should only have like one electoral vote. Nobody lives there.
Just Sean.
Just me. I'm going to turn this state red again.
Anybody got any questions, comments?
Well, now, who is it? Is it the drug dealers down in Mexico that have vehicles and are armed and their clothing is what you would see in the American military? Now, are those coyotes or those drug dealers?
No, those are the cartels. Although, I won't say the coyotes don't have that stuff, but normally when you think of a paramilitary outfit, it's the cartels. And to be honest, their weapon systems, they're not like Hezbollah has by any stretch, but they are pretty heavily armed. They tend to really like things like the Barrett 50 caliber sniper rifle, which probably one out of a million of them know how to really use. They like explosives. They like the automatic, you know, short barreled guns, things like that. But they're very dangerous. They're a very dangerous group. But I think they're dangerous more from bribing and infiltrating than it is from the armament they have. That makes any sense. They intimidate the civilian population, and then they bribe and infiltrate the Mexican police. And I think that's where their danger is. And to be honest about it, you know, Mexico, you can't own a gun, so it's very easy for them to intimidate the population by shooting a few people. And they do it quite regularly, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true, but two of those cartels are big fans of beheading people. Because they think that sends a deeper message.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think all your drug gangs have their own little niche, signatures. What was it? The Jamaican drug gangs at one time used to like to cut your throat and then drag your tongue through it like a bow tie.
Ew.
So. Yeah, there are a lot of sick people out there. And, you know, let's face facts. If you sold your soul to run drugs, you're not going to worry about whether, you know, chopping the head off is a good or bad thing.
Isn't that cutting your throat and pulling the tongue through? Isn't that a Sicilian necktie?
I forget what they call it. That might be it. It was just very gross. I remember reading about it years ago. It was, and I guess the Jamaican drug gangs are no longer a big thing. I guess drug gangs come and go. They're always there, but they just tend to change and who's dominating.
Whoever's in control at the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it used to be the Bloods and the Crips were the big ones. They're still there, but they're nowhere near as bad as some of them are. So if we want to help with suicide.
Sarah, America, you guys got anything? Obviously not. Nobody sent me a...
I got yelled at by a friend of mine this week because she accused me of ageism. I couldn't believe it.
Huh? Were you guilty of it? Were you guilty of it?
Hell no. She's older than I am.
Well, so I got yelled at. What did you do to be accused of such a crime?
I just mentioned that she might be over 70.
I got a lot of yelled back at me yesterday because I said that the Second Amendment does not grant you the right to own a firearm.
Doesn't
it? Doesn't.
It's a restriction on the government from infringing that right.
Exactly. Oh my, that thing got crazy.
I saw that and I chose not to comment.
Yeah, I muted the conversation. I couldn't do it anymore. So anyway, thanks everybody for your reposts and your donations and engagement on here. We so appreciate it and have a wonderful night.
Y'all be good.
Good night.
Bye bye.